Well, it's another losing edition of the Locked On Syracuse podcast. We're going to dive into all things from now. What is that? The fourth loss Syracuse has suffered in the ACC. First one of the season against Florida State. They split the season series. We're going to dive into what went wrong in this game, including a very bizarre end of game sequence. I do think there was one good thing you could pull out of this win. I want to discuss that with you, Tim. And we're also going to talk about Benny Williams. 0 minutes, goose egg. Never had to take off the warm-ups in this game if he didn't want to. We're going to dive into what all of that means and more coming up next.
You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome in. Today's episode of Locked On Syracuse is brought to you by Sonos. Experience the game like never before with Sonos Arc, the premium smart soundbar for TV, movies, music, gaming, and more. Visit Sonos.com to learn more. Tim Leonard and Tyler Aki with you. Follow us on Twitter at @LO_Syracuse. And we thank you for making us your first listen every single day here on this Locked On Syracuse podcast. We're talking all things Cuse hoops. We'll get to some Cuse football. There was a saving grace yesterday, Tim.
Big yes, time we needed that
line commit. So we'll talk about Francois Nolten later on in the week, but we have to get to all things hoops because that's top of mind for everybody right now. And I think this, so it's first 76-71 loss to Florida State in a game that would have put you on at least some sort of trajectory, built a little bit of momentum, would have been a winning streak for the first time in what feels like forever. And you fumble it at the end. You played pretty well in the first half. I know it ended up being a 1-point game at half, but Syracuse really in control of that first half. And then out come the Seminoles in the second half, just bombs away from three. They end up shooting 60% from distance, which makes me beg the question, where the hell was Benny Williams? Well, you can't get off the bench and get into the game for a little bit of defense here and there. That's what this team needed. In this game, they needed someone to bring a little bit of pressure off the wings, and Benny Williams was nowhere to be seen. Jim Boeheim didn't really say a whole heck of a lot about it post-game either, and it's just one of those things where you've got a guy, a talented freshman, of all, everyone on the roster, most talent is in Benny Williams, yet he can't see the floor for a single second in this game, despite the fact that he has been in the closing lineup in every single game since the new year started.
Is that true? Well, yeah. Pittsburgh, he wasn't technically.
He technically was out there at the end.
Okay.
And he was out there, but he was still out there alongside starters. Like, it wasn't like they waved the white flag. He was out there with Buddy, Jimmy, and Cole was out there too, and Joe. So he's been in those final lineups every single game of ACC play since the new year started.
Well, his minutes have been so up and down. They've been sort of puzzling because you go back to that stretch the first time we played Florida State, and he didn't play much against them in that game. And I can see that maybe this isn't a great matchup for him, considering Florida State has some length that you could throw at there. But also you could come back with, well, Florida State has athletes. Maybe we should counter with the most athletic team that we can put together, and that is including Benny Williams. We're not, at least I'll speak for myself, I'm not asking him to play 20 minutes, right? I just want him to get a shot. And if he is having a good game, continue to get reps. And also, if it comes down to, you know, Jimmy Boeheim is not playing as many minutes as normal, I'm perfectly okay with that. And I will say, we'll get into the three-guard lineup, but they did kind of do that in a roundabout way here anyway. And Jimmy Boeheim had a tough game. So maybe if it's chipping into Cole Swider's minutes as well, because you're right, Florida State, not a good three-point shooting team, had no problem going 12 of 20. They were 7 for 10 from three in the second half. You're not going to win games like that. So throw out a forward that can give you something defensively and give you a little bit more athleticism.
And one of the things, too, that's puzzling, like if you told me Jimmy Boeheim would only play 29 minutes, the fewest he's played in an ACC game so far this season. If you told me Jimmy Boeheim was only playing 29 minutes, I would have guessed Benny played about 20 minutes in this game. And that just could not have been further from the case in this one. Listen, Jimmy was bad. He was bad on defense. He wasn't giving you anything offensively, even though he did make a few key plays at the end when he did come back in. And he was entrusted to try to take the go-ahead shot, which I thought was a solid play. He got a smaller defender on him and tried to make a play at the basket. It just didn't work out. Maybe he got fouled. Maybe he didn't. That's up for debate. I kind of like the no whistle there on a play like that. But I just don't understand how he didn't get a chance. Him being Benny Williams in this game. It just makes zero sense to me. He's got the defensive potential. That's one thing. Like, we can talk about what the expectations we maybe had for Benny Williams were coming into this season. The one place where I say he's actually lived up to expectations is on the defensive side of the ball. He's one of Syracuse's best defenders, and he fits the mold of what the 2-3 is supposed to be game in and game out.
Yeah, it's funny because it doesn't take much to be one of Syracuse's best defenders. I mean, we looked this morning, they're 225 on KenPom defense.
That's a new low, right?
It's a new low every time we talk, I feel like. It just keeps going down and
down. Let's take a guess. Let's take a stab at this right now. How low will it get? This should be a prop shop thing.
Yeah,
over, I mean, under 237.5? Is that?
Yeah, it's probably going to fall because
too lenient?
I think Clemson Tuesday night, we'll get into them tomorrow and preview them. They just blew a big lead to Boston College. But also Duke over the weekend is the best team in the ACC. So I can't really see a scenario where Duke and Paolo Banchero and AJ Griffin, who's starting to start for them, is not just ripping shreds into this defense right now. Unless maybe they play Benny Williams and we see actually him dipped into in the bench and all that stuff in the second half. But it's just tough to watch Jimmy Boeheim play the 2-3 zone defense. Like, it's uncomfortable at times. And I don't know if this is just a personal thing of mine, but something about his posture and just the way that he's at, it just feels like he's not equipped to play it. And it's almost like if we were like making a company that is like lugging storage or moving equipment, and we picked you and me to lead the company.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we're two skinnier guys. Like, if we were doing a marathon, maybe we'd be decent. I mean, probably not, but if we were doing a long distance run, maybe you'd be well equipped for that. But if we're lugging up couches, like, that's not what we're asked to do. That's not something that we're capable of doing very well. And that's what it feels like when we watch Jimmy and Buddy and this team try and play the 2-3 zone. They're just not equipped to be good in the 2-3 zone.
I'm just thinking back to, because, like, the wing is the spot in the zone where you need to be most athletic. And Jimmy is maybe the most unathletic player Syracuse has had in, what, the past, like, 10 years, especially among starters.
Guys are probably on this team that are in competition for that crown. Sadly.
And that's the thing is, like, this is such a crucial part of what you need to make this whole thing work. And you've got your most unathletic player. Like, think of the last couple of guys who have played the wing areas on the zone. Elijah Hughes, freak athlete, reason he's in the NBA. Had a nice game the other day. O'Shea Brissett, freak athlete, reason he's in the NBA. Even a guy like Tyler Roberson, great athlete. And those are the guys that you need in these spots. That's why things have worked defensively for you. And this could not be further from the, like, when you look at, if you were to do like a little Syracuse 2-3 zone combine of these guys, Jimmy would, I mean, where would he finish? Like, how big would the gap be, I think, is what I'm trying to say, between Jimmy and then the next guy of like the last 10 years of guys that have played the wing on the zone?
Yeah, it would probably be Cole Swider next to him and Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard shortly after. It's really tough because, as we've talked about, this team doesn't feel like they recruited the team. It doesn't work well together because they have a lot of guys that do the same thing. And then you have Benny, who is a typical Syracuse guy that just hasn't developed, and he hasn't gotten the amount of minutes that a lot of the fan base would like. And I know Benny has looked bad when he's been out there, and there was a decent shot that he was going to go out there against Florida State if he got a chance and would have looked bad again. And we wouldn't really be having this conversation, but at least give him a shot is, I guess, what we're saying here.
Yeah.
And like we said, don't play him 20, 25 minutes if he's not playing well. But when you're struggling defensively, when you're going up against a team that has athletes, maybe it's worth at least giving the guy a shot, especially when the season's kind of trending towards a lost season and you just want to keep the guy happy and make sure that one of the better recruits we've literally gotten in the last 6-7 years isn't just going to pick up and leave, which by all signs of what he said and the articles that have been written, it doesn't seem like that, which makes me feel better, but it's still not something you just say, oh yeah, like, who cares if he's happy or not at this point, because we want to make sure he is happy.
Yeah. And again, it's the great unknown right now of, you can't question it because he never went in, but he should have been given a shot. at some point. Like, you can say all you want, oh, he was going to be destined to fail out there. Jimmy Bae, I saw him fail out there a lot in that game defensively. I saw a number of guys fail out there a lot defensively in this game. So how can you say that this is going to be so much worse? I mean, at the end of the day, like, just because some guy comes, like, let's say Benny goes out there and fails defensively three straight possessions. All right, yank him. Yank him then. Right. All right. At least you know. You didn't even give yourself a chance to try to make something happen defensively, because that's ultimately what it comes down to. I could see why Benny didn't play the first 10 minutes or so. Syracuse actually was pretty good defensively to start the game. I believe the first 15 minutes only allowed 18 points to Florida State. Like, you'll take that. But then in the final 5 minutes, they allow 18 points. And that's why Florida State ends up with 36 to close out the first half, when in reality probably should have been in the neighborhood of maybe 24 to 26. But you just opened up this can of worms now of, okay, can you keep him happy? Can he develop in this system as well? And it still makes no sense to me why he isn't getting any sort of minutes. And I get that this team, I mean, he certainly hasn't looked like the player we expected him to be, but I think on the defensive side of the ball, he sort of has looked like the player we wanted him to be.
Yeah, my guess is he just has not been good in practice this week, and that's probably what Jim Boeheim will say at some point. But another thing worth noting, and this is the final thing I'll say about Benny, is, you know, Pauly Sebelia does the engineering for the Syracuse radio games. A lot of people hear him on the radio.
I'm going on tomorrow with Pauly.
Okay, yeah, I was on with them last week, and I was joking with him because Jim Boeheim called him Paul.
Yeah.
And was sort of biting back with him. I'm sure people saw that clip. So, great guy. He's always there early setting up, and I'm back in the studios making sure everything's connected. And we were talking before the game, and he was like, man, Benny is out here getting up a lot of shots. And he's always there, you know, early to every home game, every game that he goes to. And it's usually like Buddy and Joe that are there early. And he was like, gosh, they're like really working out Benny. And then about halfway through the game, we started discussing, well, Benny hasn't played. And he was like, you know, I almost thought the way that he was working him out, or the coaches were working him out so hard at the beginning of the game, maybe it was just known that he wasn't going to play in this game. And we, of course, see him after the game taking up some shots. But that makes me wonder if, okay, maybe he had a rough week in practice, according to the coaches. We talked about how John Bull played because he had a good week in practice. And Jim Boeheim point blank said, John Bull has been the best forward off the bench in practice so far. So that's why he got minutes. And they said, okay, look, Benny, you know, get in a good amount of workout before this game because you're not going to play likely against Florida State. And they told him that beforehand. Maybe that happened. Yeah. It's just odd that he was out there and he's not normally out there before the game that early.
That's a good little observation that you and Paul made right there. I will say this. I do like the fact that you see the videos of the guy going after the game, getting the shots up. Like, I do like that. I want that to be clear, but that means nothing to me. Like, that is so commonplace at this point where it's like, listen, it's a great little thing to see. And listen, he didn't ask for cameras to be pointed at him, because if you look at who was pointing the cameras, it was a bunch of bloggers and stuff like that for the most part. But it's good to see that, A, he gets it. But B, like, I also, you see this all the time. Like, Tyus Battle did this all the time. He'd go out after a bad game, go shoot in the dome. You see this everywhere. It used to be like players would have a bad game and then go to Archibald. They go to Archibald and get some shots up. And it's like, okay, this happens across the country now. This, I'm not giving extra credit here for that, but it is good to see. It's good to see that, A, he cares. And that's certainly been something that you can't question. You can maybe question the production of Benny Williams this season. You can't question the character one iota, because he has been standout, six star really, through and through from a character standpoint this entire season. All right. I do want to discuss the three-guard lineup that we saw, because I think that was actually one of the good things to take away from this game. You and I can get into that in just a little bit. But first, it's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. And if yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, Built Bar better be a part of that plan. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And what makes Built Bar that much easier to make it stick to your resolution is that it tastes so good you'll want to eat it, unlike other protein bars that can be chalky, waxy, or sometimes even tastes like a chemical spill. Built bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which normally has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. So even if you're not a huge fan of working out, you can at least eat something that tastes good and is good for you. That way, when you enjoy a delicious Built Bar, you can almost count it as a workout. And the best part about it is that they've got a number of flavors to choose from, whether it's the coconut almond. The favorite on this show is the peanut butter brownie. We've also got the raspberry cookies and cream, salted caramel mint brownie, and so much more. And they're always coming out with new limited time flavors as well. So check out Built.com to see what's new for 2022. And right now, when you go to Built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, you get 15% off your order. Again, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. This was a new little wrinkle that Jim Boeheim rolled with lineup-wise. I think we've seen it at times this season, yeah. But I think it was more out of desperation because of foul trouble as opposed to a guy getting yanked. And it was the three-guard lineup we saw with Jimmy Boeheim going to the bench, and then Joe Girard, Samir Torrence, and Buddy Boeheim. I think Buddy does a pretty solid job, actually, on that wing area of the 2-3 zone, which I think helps this lineup because that way you're maximizing your defense as best you can. But I noted this little stretch here, okay? So the three-guard lineup came into effect from the 13:30 minute of the second half to the two-minute portion of the second half. Those are approximate times right there. First 6 minutes were great. Syracuse goes on a 15-6 run. They retake the lead. They shoot 5 of 9 from the field and don't turn the ball over for about 11 and a half minutes against a really good takeaway team in Florida State. Cole shot well, and then defensively they forced 2 turnovers during that stretch. But the final 5 minutes of that 11-minute stretch, 13-6 Florida State run. They shoot 5 of 8 from the field, 3 of 4 from three. And that's the thing, is there is no defensive consistency, and teams start to figure things out. They start to pick up little things about Syracuse's defense. I think the first half is another example of that. First 15 minutes were rock solid for Syracuse. But once there was a little bit of run in them, Florida State figured things out in the final 5 minutes, made things competitive at the half. And then you see the same thing in this. That three-guard lineup works really well for the first 6 or so minutes, but then the final 5 minutes of it, Florida State regresses and gets some good looks and good opportunities, and they make it a game and ultimately win the game.
Yeah, it's kind of the same old story. Get a double-digit lead in the first half and then let it sort of slip away from there. I did like, and this was a game where you could really nitpick a lot of things that Jim Boeheim did not do well, I would say, and a lot of things that stem from recruiting and all that. It's been a tough year for Jim Boeheim, but this is probably – one of his better wrinkles of the season was going to this three-guard lineup, because not only did it help Syracuse just get into a better flow, and Saimir was better at breaking the pressure, which you got to give him a lot of credit. He played really good in this game. And coming after we sort of discussed how Girard and him should not get an even minute split, this was one of the few games this year where I can confidently say that Saimir was better than Joe Girard for the time he was out there. And Girard had 5 turnovers. Yeah. We talked about how turnovers were a big key for Syracuse on the preview podcast. They finished with 12, but Girard was struggling to break the pressure. They go to Torrence, and also they didn't do enough of this. They tried to go towards it at the end with Jesse Edwards a little bit, but it gave them the opportunity to get Jesse matched up on a smaller guy, because Florida State switches everything. And I don't really know why they continue to do that against Syracuse. I feel like it's a bad tactic, but they kept doing it. And Jesse did take advantage of that a little bit in the first half. And then it did seem like Boeheim was trying to draw up plays with that in mind towards the end of the game. And they got the ball to Jesse on some of the final possessions where he got fouled. And then even that last possession, which we'll talk about with Jimmy, it's Jimmy on a smaller defender like you touched on earlier. And that comes from going to that three-guard lineup a little bit, because then Florida State has to counter with a little bit of a smaller lineup as well.
Yeah, and that's the fascinating part, is like Jesse – Syracuse is a team you can't go small on, right? You can't, because Jesse's proven himself to be a great offensive option when he's given a chance. And in this game, he gets off to the hot start, finishes with 15 points. He has a nice offensive game once again, and he gets to the free throw line too. And he's, again, 5 of 8 from the stripe in this game. You'd like that to be more like 6 or 7 of 8 when it's all said and done. But he's a threat offensively. You cannot go small, and they kind of shied away from getting Jesse the ball when they did go small. But one thing about when you bring up Samir Torrence too, Samir makes Joe so much better because Joe doesn't have to be the primary ball handler. He can sort of focus on what he does best, and that's shoot the basketball. But here's where things got interesting. So Joe had, during that three-guard lineup stretch, Joe didn't turn the ball over once. He played 11 minutes of turnover-free basketball, yet somehow finishes with five turnovers for the game as a whole. But he also only shot the ball once.
Yeah.
During that.
Didn't score in the second half, right?
Right. And that's something that you need to, when you've got Samir out there, who is a zero offensively for you, even though he did have 4 points, he had actually a couple of nice finishes at the rim. For the most part, he is a zero for you offensively. He has to find ways to get Joe Girard the basketball, because this is a Joe Girard playing off the ball is more of that two guard that I think really works. It's something that I look at it in the NBA right now, and what I see happening with the Chicago Bulls is they've turned Coby White into a two guard, and Coby White has turned into a really nice NBA player now that he is off the ball. And I kind of see Joe Girard in the same light. Like, Joe Girard's a scorer. He's on Syracuse because he is a scoring point, or he's a scoring guard, right?
Right.
Who just happened to be thrust into the point guard role more out of necessity than as opposed to the fit. And I think if Syracuse tries to turn Joe Girard into more of a two, that'll open up a lot of things and make Joe a more efficient basketball player, Samir a better basketball player. And then defensively, we've seen Syracuse look like a better basketball team.
Yeah, I'm with you on Joe being at the two as his natural position. I think the entire fan base would agree with you on that one. I do think the fact that Joe didn't score when Samir was out there is more of a Joe problem than a Samir problem, though. Because Samir was getting
the ball once. I'd have to go back and watch and see how many touches Joe was getting, what kind of defense was being drawn up. But he only shot the ball once, which
he wasn't aggressive.
Odd. Yeah.
And he doesn't – he can't really get by, guys. Even that last possession, they sort of bring over the double team, and then he drops it off to Jesse. And that was probably the correct play at that moment because they were so pressed up on Buddy and Cole and trying to take away – the three there and just trying to take away Buddy from getting the basketball. But it's been a rough stretch of games for Joe offensively. And it feels like teams have sort of tightened up on him even more. And to have five turnovers is inexcusable because he's a guy that going up against Florida State, where you know that they can kind of minimize Buddy with the length they have. And they actually just pretty much put Caleb Mills on him in this game. But still, there's so much length on Florida State. And they have made it a priority in back-to-back games now of trying to take out Buddy. Like, every team is going to make it a priority. Joe has to step up. Cole has to step up. And Cole was fine in this game, but he still didn't really hit some of those key shots that he needed to down the stretch. Yeah. And then when Jimmy's not giving you anything, it's just they need more from those secondary offensive guys when it's Buddy going against Florida State.
Yeah, to hit on Cole here real quick. Cole hit rally building shots, but he didn't hit exclamation point shots.
Yeah.
Some that could have put the game out of reach, could have put you ahead in key situations, but he always, it felt like, hit the three that got you within two. And then listen, those are important shots too, but you also have to hit some of the ones where you're open. Again, I thought he played a fine game in this one. Also had 7 rebounds to go along with 17 points. And he did play all 40 minutes, which I'd have to go back and look. I don't think he's had logged a 40 yet this season. Feel like he's one of those guys that gets pulled.
If not, he's 36, 37, you know?
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
he's playing a lot.
No, yeah. That's not to say he's not playing a lot, but, but getting back to Girard here, like the five turnovers thing is something that needs to obviously be improved upon because Syracuse for the most part did a pretty good job of taking care of the basketball in this game. They only turned the ball over 12 times. I'd have to go back and see what the percentage of that is for the game. But five of them were Girard. No one else had more than one. So really your problem was a Girard problem. It wasn't a team problem, which I guess is somewhat refreshing to see, but Girard's also a guy who handles the ball at a high volume as well.
Yeah. He's not a point guard and we've documented that, and he's sort of playing out of position all his Syracuse career here, and he's going to give you some good games. And we've joked about how he'll play like he's on Siena sometimes and play like he's on Syracuse. This is the type of game where ACC game, must win. You needed him to play well, and he really only played well for like 2-3 minutes. Like, he scored 11 points in the first half, but it all came in that last stretch where I think he made 3 of 4 shots to close the half, and he did have some nice moves. Like there was one sort of tough in contact layup that you rarely ever see him actually convert. And that was right towards the end of the half. And he made a three in that stretch. But outside of like 5 or 6 minutes, he just didn't really feel like he was in the game. And that's happened too many times. That happened in the Virginia game as well.
His turn came, I believe it was in the first half, where he had the ball just ripped from his hands. It was just a lazy turnover. And then Florida State starts to get out in transition, and then he commits a frustration foul. Like, that's the stuff that can't happen. You cannot get in your own head. You cannot lose the battle between your own ears. That's something you can control. And there were just some low IQ plays, really, that he made throughout this game that was frustrating to see. By the way, I did look. Syracuse, a 19% turnover percentage in this game. So still about 6% below what Florida State usually does. They had an 18.8 in the first meeting. So turnovers, really, I wouldn't say were the issue in this game for Syracuse. There were a number of other things that I think you could point to. I do want to get to one more thing, and that is the late game execution, which Joe Girard turnover, worth mentioning, because that is a part, a big part of what happened in the late game execution. So we will do that in just a second. But first, BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. And with a new year and a new updated desktop and mobile website, you got to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Use our promo code LOCKEDON, that's locked on, all one word, to get a 50% welcome bonus that'll get you started on betonline.ag. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline is where the game starts. Where do you want to even start with this? Because this is one of the most, like, we talk about how Syracuse has sort of found new ways to lose games.
Yep, this add season. This to the list.
I mean, what was this? And okay, in fairness, we kind of have zero idea what happened on that play because of the fact that ESPN cuts away.
Right.
And like, they get the dunk. I think it was Matthew Cleveland gets the transition dunk, and yep. Joe Girard gets the ball right away. He's got a plan. Like,
he said he saw someone open.
Yeah, he made this move with conviction. And there may have been someone open down court, and it was just a bad pass. But what the hell was going on with ESPN? Because they cut right away with 3 seconds left in the game and no timeout being called. They cut right away to the Florida State bench. And next thing you see is Syracuse with head in hands, and the ball is going back the other way to Florida State. In fairness, there may have been an open guy down there, but we need like an all-22 cam to sort of see what happened.
I don't think there was, though. And even if there was, I still don't know if the pass is justifiable because clearly it didn't end up going
the way that you desired. But Joe Girard, in fairness, did hit one of these passes earlier on in this game. He's hit a couple of them this season, too.
Yeah, but come on. 3 seconds left, timeout.
You got to move. Listen, I'm always in the camp of you call the timeout. I am always call the timeout. Especially at the collegiate level where you got 18 to 22 year olds trying to patrol and run the show themselves. So I'm not going to knock Joe. It looks bad. It looks really, really bad when that's your late game sequence that ends up unfolding. And that's yet another terrible late game sequence for this team. Like I started to look through some of the old ones, like obviously the Wake Forest game, you couldn't inbound. Miami was a three show to close things out. Virginia, you missed two really good looks from threes. Like, there's just new ways in these final 2 minutes, 90 seconds that you're finding ways to lose.
And how about Indiana? I know they won that game.
Yeah,
remember
that's
the
true.
Free throw, yeah, the Benny box out? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
and I was thinking Indiana's really the only game that they have come through in the clutch, minus that play, just looking at the overtime segment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been
Florida
other
State
games.
Too, the first Florida State game.
The first time, you could say, but to me, the fact that they came through that time was Buddy went into alpha mode, and they don't really have an alpha on the team right now the way that Buddy is being defended, and he hasn't played quite as good as maybe that stretch of the Indiana game. Like, he went up against a bad defense in that game and just took over, and you need that guy in late stages of games. It was sort of odd to see them on the last possession never get it to Buddy there, but I don't really blame him because – that may not have been the best decision. I think they got it down low in a favorable spot for Syracuse. Yeah. I was a little surprised Jesse just didn't take the shot, but he's probably maybe a year away from making.
He was also like partially double teamed there too.
Yeah.
It was, he had an immediate defender and a help side too.
I'll say this about the Jimmy foul or no foul. Again, I listen to the game on radio because I work them for radio. And then I usually go back and kind of rewatch the game. So I didn't see the play, and there was a lot of chatter on Twitter and everything about the play. And when I watched back the play, I was kind of like, yeah, like I thought it was going to be a little more blatant of a foul based on the chatter on Twitter and all that.
In a play like that, you leave no doubt. And Jimmy certainly left some doubt there on the table. You have to make that foul with conviction.
Strong.
So you're talking about that one. I'm talking about right after when he's trying to foul someone along the sideline.
Oh, no. I'm talking about like.
Yeah, but you're talking about that. Yeah, no, I'm cool with the no call there. I'm cool with the no call there. I don't think that call gets made very often. I just don't. With, what was it, 8 seconds left, 10 seconds left in the game? I don't think that call gets. I'm not pointing and saying officials lost. I will rarely ever say officials lose a team a basketball game, but that was certainly one of the cases where they certainly did not lose Syracuse a basketball game. I would say, though, like on that foul, when you're trying to foul them, obviously, at the end of the game.
He didn't even try, though, it seemed like to me.
I went back and looked. He's pointing because he thinks Florida State stepped out of bounds. Your focus should not be on trying to play your own official there. You have to make that foul and make it and leave no. He should not be – the player that was along the sideline there should not be able to get a pass off. That's what type of foul you should be committing right there. I'm not saying you're going and killing the guy, but wrap him up a little bit.
Right. No, that goes back to a problem I've had with this team is that every play that Buddy, it doesn't go his way, Jimmy, it doesn't go his way, you see the hands in the air, like complain about the refs, which that happens at a lot of levels of basketball, a lot in the NBA, but it also probably stems from genetics a little bit with their dad because Jim Boeheim was not happy with how that last play was handled. But I just think it's sort of lazy and it's not a great way to end the game and be complaining about a call that, first off, I think Roger Ayers was the head official of this game, probably the best official in college basketball. Yeah. And that's pretty much consensus take. And I thought it was one of the better officiated Syracuse games this year. The other thing that's noteworthy with this, I was reading something in The Athletic, I believe recently from Seth Davis on how foul count across college basketball is at an all-time low, just total fouls per game and the amount that is being called. And I feel like that has been a thing that we've been talking about a lot on this podcast this year is us getting on here and saying, man, Buddy got hit a lot in this game and just didn't get calls to go his way. And it's a trend in college basketball that's happened over the last 3 or 4 years. And whether it's a good or a bad trend, I don't know, but I do know that that does not favor Syracuse.
Yeah.
They're not a physical team. So that's not good. Like, Jesse gets a rebound taken away from him at the end of the game. You just got to be better than that. You can't be, and it's not Jesse's fault we lost the game, but there needs to be more toughness down the stretch of games, especially given the way the whistles have gone.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point there when you bring up the foul numbers, because you can say, oh, Syracuse, it doesn't help them, but we've also seen a lot of times, a lot of halves where Syracuse, from a defensive stance, I guess, doesn't go into the bonus. Like, as in the opponent doesn't go into the bonus in the first half. Like, we see a lot of Syracuse halves where there's only 3 or 4 fouls. So it helps them out, too, because it's taking teams off the stripe. And for what it's worth, Syracuse has not been a good defensive free throw team, as I put it in air quotes. But teams are not getting to the foul stripe as much. And I think that's certainly something that helps Syracuse. And especially with a big that fouls as much as Jesse, like, Jesse has fouled out in almost every single ACC game this season. But I would guess his first half foul count is less than 2 per game.
Right.
Like he, a lot of these games, he has 1, sometimes even none heading into half.
Yeah, he finally didn't foul out in this game. So props to him there. But that shouldn't be something we're giving props
we're not,
to.
You don't get an extra allowance for saying please and thank you to grandma and grandpa. That's what we're asking out of Jesse right here. So don't foul out of games. All right. That's the bottom line. All right. That's everything we got here for this Florida State recap. We will be back tomorrow to preview Clemson, a game that Syracuse, I mean, if this wasn't a had-to-have a game, then Clemson sure as hell is, because they need to find some sort of mojo here, get back into some sort of rhythm, because this is a very winnable stretch that we have talked about. We talked about you had a chance to pick up 8 of 9. Well, now 8 of 9 means a win on the road against Duke. Can they do all of that? This is a big week. Clemson and then Duke on the road. That's coming up next Saturday, and then Clemson, of course, coming up Tuesday. So we will break down everything about the Tigers, get you the prop shop. The Bundo's Digits will also make its return as well. So we will do that with you on the program tomorrow. For Tim, I'm Tyler. We will talk to you guys later.